So once you've chosen your subject and what you're going to do, it's getting your personality across. Now, again, you won't learn about me much on LinkedIn. You won't know what my hobbies are, my hair color, or anything like that. You know, what you will know is I've got quite strong opinions and I'm not afraid to voice them. And I try and do it in a way which is funny.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Student Lawyer Podcast Series. Whether you're at school, sixth form, university, thinking about a career in law, or exploring law careers, you're in the right place. We are the one-stop shop for student lawyers. If you'd like to join the Student Lawyer as a writer, please email hello@thestudentlawyer.com. This episode is sponsored by the University of Law. The University of Law offers a range of undergraduate and postgraduate courses and master's degrees alongside an award-winning pro bono clinic so you can build up your legal experience while studying. And their experienced career service will enable you to put your best foot forward when launching your legal career. The courses are employment focused and based on real legal practice, so you'll be better prepared for the workplace. Part-time and online study options are available so you can work and study at the same time. Click the link in the description box of the podcast to find out more about the courses on offer. Hello and welcome to the Student Lawyer Podcast Series. My name's Camilla, I'm a trainee solicitor and I'm going to be your host for today. In today's episode, we're joined by James Quornby, partner and head of private wealth at Stevenson Harwood. James is renowned for discussing topics relating to non-doms on LinkedIn, which has earned him a spot as one of the top 10 legal LinkedIn influencers by TBD. We've invited James onto the show today to discuss his career and to provide LinkedIn advice. So without further ado, let's welcome James onto the show.
It's good to be here, Camilla.
Thank you. So I wondered if you could start off by providing an overview of your career to date.
It's a bit of a wonky career, actually, to be honest, because I started my working life opening envelopes in the British Telecom cashiers department in Ilford. So it's not a standard start to a law career when I was 16. I got rapidly promoted through the organisation, ended up being the boss of that department when I was 21. And I thought, I really can't face a life living under the foot of British Telecom. So I left and did a law degree. So that's how I did that. But when I was at British Telecom, I discovered my love of economics, actually. And I was doing business and finance diplomas and what have you to groom me for management in BT. And that came in handy for my later career. When I qualified, I worked for a very horrible firm and I hated it every single second. So as soon as I qualified from being a trainee, I decided to leave and I was literally going to take anything that came up. And this rather quirky job came up for a firm called Rooks Ryder, who are a lovely firm, doing offshore tax. And you could write all I knew about offshore tax on one of those very small post-it notes, you know, the really small ones you use to tabulate your books for revision purposes.
Oh, right.
That's how much I knew about offshore tax. But anyway, these guys gave me an interview and I had 2 weeks to prepare. And so I disappeared into the law library and I managed to find a chapter on offshore tax. And I started reading because I knew literally nothing about tax. Let alone offshore tax. And I always remember when I was reading this chapter from Tolley's. There's a Tolley's tax planning book, and there's one on offshore matters or offshore dimension or something. And I remember reading this thing about freezer trusts. And I thought, what on earth has refrigeration got to do with taxation? Anyway, that was just the nickname for these trusts that you'd create, that which essentially was the equivalent of putting your assets into a deep freezer. You wouldn't be taxed until you took it out. Anyway, so I blagged my way through this interview with my two-week-old knowledge on tax, and they gave me a job as a solicitor in their offshore tax department. So you can imagine my learning curve was a bit like the north face of the Eiger. And I had to learn a lot. But it turns out, weirdly, that I have the right brain for tax. And so I've continued along those lines. And I won't bore with all the steps in between, but I ended up being, I ended up working in, after that firm, two other firms. And then I landed in my current firm about 10 years ago because I wanted to work in an international law firm. And that's where I am. And that's allowed me to do some more exciting work. And what I would say, by the way, just because I have to say this, for those people out there that are considering what branch of law to go into, tax from the outside looks complex and ugly, but from the inside, it's lovely. Now, why is that? I mean, you do have to be brainy to be wanting to do tax. So if you're the kind of person that likes spending a lot of time in the library, likes complexity, possibly likes sci-fi, I don't know what it is, but most tax lawyers seem to like sci-fi, including me. It is actually a really nice way to make a living because it's not a generally not a transactional department. And when you get to qualify, if you're in transactional departments, you'll find that you don't have control over your life. If there's a big transaction going on, you know, sleeping and eating and social life doesn't really matter. If you're an advisor, and, you know, we tax lawyers consider ourselves to be consultants, really, we can just say, well, actually, no, this is going to take 2 weeks. So it is actually quite a nice career. And I mentioned my love of economics. My first love is economics. There is a big supply and demand equation here. Real estate lawyers are 10 a penny, but tax lawyers are really rare. And when I did my tax exams, only 5% of the people taking the Chartered Institute exams were lawyers. 95% were accountants. Anyway, there you are.
Fascinating. And I have to say that I'm going to be qualifying into tax in September. And it was one of those areas that I wanted to try because of the whole supply and demand thing, thinking yeah. that, you know, if I do like it, then that'll be great. But I didn't necessarily expect to like it. But then when I started it, like you said, I really liked the advisory side of it. And but, you know, when I tell other people, sometimes they look at me like I'm a bit strange. So but they obviously haven't tried it. So, yeah.
Look, it's always a showstopper in a party.
Yeah.
If someone asks me what I do and I say I'm a tax lawyer, it just completely stops the conversation. So what what I've done sometimes is say that I'm a human rights lawyer. Right. And that works. Because actually tax is all about human rights as well, if once you get into it. But anyway, I'm glad you're doing the tax journey. And you'll find also if you're any good at tax, you'll never be out of work, mm-hmm. ever. You know, it's one of those counter-cyclical departments in that whatever's going on, whether there's a recession or a boom, whether you've got a Labour government or a Conservative government or something in between, one thing governments can never resist is to muck around with the tax system. And every time they muck around with the tax system and introduce new legislation, I mean, we've had two finance bills already this year, and it's only 26th of April. And it looks like we're going to get a third one in June. And then I heard in the Times that he's going to do a giveaway budget before the election. So we'll have a fourth finance bill in September. Who gets to look at all this stuff? It's the tax lawyers. Who gets to advise on it? Us. And then we can charge for it. It's a wonderful process.
Absolutely. So when I was researching you for the podcast, I noticed that it seems like you progressed to partner around 4 years after qualifying, which seems extremely impressive. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen anyone progress that quickly. So I just wondered if you had any tips for junior lawyers who are keen to also get ahead in their careers.
Well, be pushy. But that's not going to be enough. There's nothing worse than a pushy assistant solicitor with no talent and no brains. But you've got to back yourself for success. So the reason I made partner within 4 years is what happened is that as lovely as Rooks Rider was, they were quite content for me to bubble along as an assistant forever and ever. And after 4 years with them, I thought, you know what? I don't think I'm ever going to make Partner Hero. It's going to take so long. I'm going to be middle-aged by the time it happens. So I'm going to leave. And what I did is I moved to another firm which was not expert in offshore tax. And I was so precocious then. I mean, I had sort of boundless optimism and self-belief. I said, I'll set up a tax department in your firm. And that was a firm called DMH, which is now called DMH Stanard, which is actually quite a big firm. And so they just gave me a desk and a phone and told me to build a department, which is kind of scary. And I think most people probably wouldn't do that. But I actually turned that into success within 12 months, and then they made me partner. And then from the thing is, once you've made partner in one firm, it's kind of a ratchet effect that you'll never get another job that's not a partnership job, even if you're trading up in terms of firms, which I did. So the next firm I went to was a better firm than DMH. I went in as partner as well. And then within, I think, 1 year of joining them, I made equity. So I've been an equity partner in law firms for 20 years, which is quite scary. Makes me feel very old. So the tip is, if you think you're good and you're entrepreneurial, then back yourself and go for it. But you need to understand the economics of law firms. And that's that, you know, when I'm looking at who's got partnership potential, it's not just, are you brainy? And can you produce a nicely polished piece of advice? But are you commercial? Can you bring in work? Can you manage clients? Can you manage your time so that you can actually make a profit on the job? There's nothing worse than a really academic lawyer who's got working on a job, and you're given a £5,000 fee quote, and he or she runs up £12,000 of work in progress. I mean, that's just beyond annoying. So I think you need to be more fully rounded as a lawyer, not just good academically. You need to think about the business of the law, what makes money and what doesn't. And ultimately, it's about bringing clients in. It's about doing the job, sending a bill, making a profit on that job, and making sure that bill is collected as well.
Thank you for explaining the steps there. It's really interesting to hear, you know, what partnership material looks like from that stage in a junior lawyer's career, I suppose, and as they want to progress. So also congratulations on being named as a top 10 legal LinkedIn influencer by TBD. For those who do not follow you on LinkedIn, please could you explain what you write about on LinkedIn and perhaps provide some insight into when and why you began posting?
Well, I don't put photos of my cats on there, you'll be pleased to hear. And actually don't do anything that personal. So you'll never have seen a picture of me. Actually, you might have done. It's rare. If I'm at a conference, you might see a picture of me presenting or something like that. So my LinkedIn strategy is to take basically one topic and do it to death. So now other people have other strategies. And my topic is the world of offshore and non-domiciled individuals, which has been a huge political football, especially since we have a prime minister who was non-domiciled and is in fact married to a non-domiciled individual. So it's been massive news. And I remember I'd put a non-domiciled tax has been a football for a while, but because of Rishi Sunak and his wife, there was a big story about her. You probably remember a year and a half ago, possibly, whenever he became prime minister. We've had so many prime ministers, I've actually lost count. I don't know when he became prime minister. But and I started commenting on that. I mean, I've commented on tax for a long time on LinkedIn. But that got so many views, clicks, or whatever you call it. It's like 250,000. That suddenly I had people take interest in me, and I thought, well, actually, people are interested in non-dom. So I just kept at that. So anything that comes up, any rumours I hear in Parliament, I've got lots of political contacts in the Houses of Commons and Lords. And also I speak to people who drive policy, because there are people outside of government that drive policy. And then when you start to think about tax policy more, you find more of it. It's just the way it works. You know, when you start reading news online, or you're reading The Economist or the FT, you start to think about tax policy more. So that's all I've done. That's my niche, is that if you want to know about what's going on in the non-dom world, you come to me. The second thing is it's about personality. So once you've chosen your subject and what you're going to do, it's getting your personality across. Now, again, I don't focus on me. You won't learn about me much on LinkedIn. You won't know what my hobbies are, my hair color, or anything like that. You know, what you will know is I've got quite strong opinions, and I'm not afraid to voice them. And I try and do it in a way which is funny. So I think if you're entertaining, you're more likely to be read. There is a tendency for lawyers to be a bit dry. And this is one of the things I wanted to get across when it comes to LinkedIn. It's the nature of our training, right? You're given essays to write, and everything has to be precise and quite dry. And you've got your footnotes and your conclusions and summaries. And a lot of marketing done by lawyers pretty much follows what they've been taught to do at law school. And it takes them forever. So something happens on a Monday, and then 3 weeks later, they'll release some client alert after it's been through about five different pairs of hands at the firm and it's gone through the marketing department. And by the time they've released it, you've ended up with this essay that's, you know, 3 weeks out of date, and no one really wants to read because they don't have the attention span. And that's the problem. So the art of LinkedIn really is to respond and respond quickly. So for instance, look, just last night, as I was just packing up to leave my London home to come down to Sussex, where I'm speaking to you from now, I saw that the IFS had released a report on inheritance tax and business property relief. And I did a speed read of it and I hated it. So I sat down in front of my computer and drafted my thoughts on that, saying how much I hated it and why I hated it. And I posted that at, 6:30 last night. And I checked this morning, I've already got something like 13,000 views. It's responding quickly, setting out your position, not boring people. I guess that's going to be my other big tip. Just don't be boring. You know, the whole point, if people want to read long content on anything, there's loads of ways of doing it. You can lose yourself in LexisNexis, right? That's like a goblin's cave, LexisNexis. Once you get in, you can never find your way out again. Long articles written by, you know, learned people and stuff. LinkedIn's a different beast. LinkedIn, it's scrolling time, you know, and if something grabs your attention and it's put across in a pithy, succinct and sometimes funny way, you're more likely to read it. And the other thing you've got to do on LinkedIn is to generate debate. And again, you're not going to generate debate by being dry and neutral. And a lot of stuff I say people don't agree with. And then they put on my feed, I don't agree with that. And I love that. They might think I don't like being disagreed with, but I absolutely love it. Because what will happen is other people pile in and say they don't agree with me. And then other people come to my defense. And before you know it, I've got 50 or 60 comments on my original post, which probably only took me 5 minutes to draft. So I think that's the secret, is you've got to respond quickly, and you've got to have an opinion or a position, and you've got to get your personality across somehow. We need to be able to identify with you somehow.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And do you think that law firms are kind of open to their, you know, lawyers being active on LinkedIn in all cases, or do you think it depends?
Well, here's the problem with LinkedIn. It's hard to control what your lawyers do. So we have a policy, and most firms have a policy about what you put on LinkedIn. You can end your own career pretty quickly by saying the wrong thing in the wrong way. Don't ever use LinkedIn when you're drunk.
If anyone gets one thing from this episode, yeah, be that.
If you're on the train going home after quite a good night out and you're scrolling on LinkedIn, you feel like making a comment on someone else's feed or putting your own post, just don't do it. Wait until the morning. I think for junior lawyers, it's a tricky one. Taking strong positions on things when you're a junior lawyer is going to be tough, because you may be taking a position that your firm will not like. Big tip, avoid politics at all times. And what I mean by politics, that's beyond the party political into geopolitics. For instance, my law firm has 3 offices in China. So whatever we might think about People's Republic of China, and we'll all have views, you'll never hear me comment on anything positive or negative about that country. It's just too tricky. You need to be aware of the firm that you're in and what they do. And if you're not, the chance of you saying something stupid that's going to cause a big problem is huge. Be aware of your firm's profile, what they do, who their clients are. Another big mistake, criticizing a company. Let's just choose one at random. One of the water companies, it's good to criticize those, isn't it? We think. But what if your firm acts for, you know, Thames Water, and you just shoved something on LinkedIn, say, oh, it's disgusting how Thames Water's pumping sewage into our rivers. You know, just don't do it. Don't criticize anyone on LinkedIn unless you know it's completely safe to do so. The only criticism I ever give on LinkedIn is to politicians who come up with dumb tax policy. But it's never party political. I'll just say it's dumb. This policy is dumb, and this is the reason it's dumb, not because they're Conservative or Labour. And in fact, I've criticised Jeremy Hunt as much as I've criticised Rachel Reeves or anyone else who introduces dumb policy. And if they keep coming up with dumb stuff, I'm going to keep criticising them. So probably the most criticised is Margaret Hodge, who's just got a complete blind spot on offshore tax and non-doms. And I think she's an idiot. She just keeps saying the wrong thing again and again and again. So, but we don't act for her. So it's pretty safe for me to do that. So be very careful about expressing strong opinions. And I think if you're a junior lawyer, you might want to get your personality across by being slightly humorous or, you know, lighthearted in the way you get your points across. So yeah, it is a two-edged sword, LinkedIn, and firms are very nervous about their lawyers, their young lawyers, letting loose on LinkedIn. So be very careful and check what your policy is as well to see what you're allowed to do and what not.
Yeah, that's really helpful, actually, because I think for, you know, some juniors, if they see people such as yourself with strong opinions, they might not know exactly what the difference is between perhaps criticising a company and criticising, you know, policy created by politicians. So yeah, I think that's really helpful that you explained that, so thank you.
I'd like to take a moment to speak about the University of Law, which is the university I decided to study my LPC at. The University of Law is the sponsor of this podcast and makes it possible for us to continue bringing these episodes to you. So we really appreciate you supporting us by supporting our sponsors. What really sets the University of Law apart from other universities is its belief in training students for the real world from the moment they accept a place. The University of Law's experienced career service and award-winning pro bono clinics offer students the chance to get real-life legal experience, which can boost employability. They offer a range of undergraduate and postgraduate legal training and master's degrees designed by qualified experts to help students excel at any stage of their career. Their courses are employment-focused, honing key skills in a teaching environment based on real legal practice. Part-time and online study options are also available on many of their courses to help students work and study at the same time. If you'd like to find out more about the courses on offer, please click the link in the description box of the podcast.
And what benefits have you gained from posting on LinkedIn?
That's difficult to measure, to be honest with you, Camilla. I think that I don't do it in order to benefit myself particularly. I do it because I feel strongly about defending my client base. So 90% of my clients are non-DOMs. I know that they bring a huge amount of energy, expertise and capital into the UK. And I feel that some of the debate about non-DOMs is actually just xenophobia dressed up as, you know, tax justice. And I don't like that. There is a kind of anti-foreigner feel to it. Look at those rich people coming over here, you know, not paying their fair share. I just don't like it. And if I don't like something, I have a tendency to be a bit of a big mouth. And I have done when I was younger, I was very active in gay politics, activist and a member of all sorts of organizations. And I was doing marches, and I just can't shut my mouth if I feel something's wrong. Now, I'm defending a very wealthy cohort, but nonetheless, a lot of these clients become friends of mine, and I'm loyal to my clients. I'm loyal to my cohort. You know, like these people, they do bring in a lot of capital. They start up businesses. They're serial entrepreneurs. Those businesses pay corporation tax and VAT and national insurance contributions. They employ people. Those people who are employed pay income tax and national insurance contributions, and they contribute to the economy. Non-DOMs bring in, and there's a tiny cohort, 68,000 taxpayers, bring in £12.4 billion per annum. So that each non-DOM person is bringing in about 15 times the amount of tax of an average British citizen. I mean, it's an astonishing contribution. So the reason I do it is because I feel strongly about it. If I get some publicity for doing that, and I do, because what happens now, because I get so many viewers, is that I get journalists contacting me and saying, can we lift what you've said on LinkedIn and turn it into an article? So it's happened to me twice in the last week. I get invited onto things like this. I'm on the radio so much I've lost count. I'm on Radio 2 a lot, Times Radio, LBC, things like that. So that's a nice spin-off. That doesn't directly bring me work, but I do get work from LinkedIn. It's not enough to it's not enough to pay the rent. So I get some tangential benefits from it. But if I say do it because you love it, that, you know, don't, if you go into anything like this expecting to make a load of money, you're going to be perpetually disappointed. What I find is that people that do things because they love doing it will become successful and will make money in time. But you won't find a direct causal relationship initially. So do it because you love it. But have fun. And if you have fun, which I do, the people reading it will have fun and they'll like you. And, you know, ultimately, the business of law is the business of people. People instruct you because, not just because you're good, it's kind of taken as given that you're going to be good at what you do. Otherwise, you wouldn't be having the position you have. But they're buying into you as a person, that this is the kind of person I want to deal with. He or she's going to be fun to deal with, going to be efficient and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's the real benefit of LinkedIn. It enables you to convey your personality and your skill set, which is basically anyone could ever want. What's your skill set and what are you going to be like to deal with as a person? And that will come across way more strongly in a LinkedIn post than in a letter of engagement.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. And do you have any advice for junior lawyers about building their own personal brand, both online and offline?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I guess I've been doing that my whole life, is building a personal brand and deciding what kind of lawyer you want to be. So it's more relevant for some lawyers than others. I think you need to decide what you want to do. I mean, I've met some lawyers that they just want to be backroom people. You know, they want to be technicians and they never want to become partner. So if that's you, and there's nothing wrong with that, then your life is going to be steeped in, you know, more of the academic end of the law. If you want to make a partner, to make partner in a law firm, then I'd strongly encourage you to get involved in the business element, to actually learn what the business of law is. So if you don't understand salary multiples and gross profit and EBITDA, if you don't understand the economics of law firms, then there's something wrong with you if you want to become a partner. How can you? It'd be like trying to become a chief executive of a tech company without understanding how to turn a computer on. You know, you need to understand what makes money in law firms, and you need to be on top of your recoverability and your realization rate. So if, you know, if you're being charged out at £300 an hour, you'll be wanting to know how much of that's actually being billed. You need to be measuring your work in progress versus the estimate. So decide what kind of lawyer you want to be. Backroom technical person, or do you want to become a leader? If you want to become a leader, then there's more that's required from you than just being a good lawyer. You have to be a good business person, and you have to be good at dealing with people. And you know, and in terms of brand to the outside world, because I'm talking about looking in at the moment, what's going on in the firm. For the outside world, that's depend on the area of law that you're in, I think, you know, because, you know, frankly, litigators are very different animals to tax lawyers, for instance. You know, a shipping lawyer is going to be very different to a real estate lawyer. So you'll find your niche, as we will have to do when we qualify, because we will have to specialize these days. And then your personality will drag you towards your niche anyway. As I said, I'm a very techie, geeky person, actually, you know, and I'm suited to tax. I love a bit of complexity, but I don't take it too seriously. So I sort of take the piss out of myself for being a geek. That's kind of my brand. So you'll find your own way and whatever you feel comfortable with, but it's got to be authentic. That's the main thing. And I can't stress this enough. Don't try and be somebody you're not. So embrace your inner geek. That's, for me, embrace it and say, look, I'm a geek. I love Star Trek. I love tax. If you don't like it, tough. Whatever you are and you're comfortable with, be it. But just please don't pretend to be sophisticated when you're not. So, you know, I'm just an overeducated Essex gay boy, and I'm not going to pretend I'm anything other than that. I'm not going to pretend I went to school at Eton. Just be yourself, and people will identify with you. If you try and pretend to be someone else, it looks inauthentic and you look like a fake. And I've come across people like that in law, and I can sniff them out in 5 seconds. And I know I never want to deal with them again. I just want someone to be straightforward, and I don't care where they're from. I don't care how they speak. What I do care about is what's their personality. Have they got brains? Can they apply those brains? Are they trustworthy, honest people? Are they fun to deal with, or are they as dry as bone? You know, and that's, so just be yourself and enjoy it. And if you enjoy your job, people enjoy working with you, your colleagues will enjoy working with you, and the clients will come back again and again to instruct you. I've got clients who've followed me through 4 law firms. They've been with me for 25 years because for some reason they find something about me engaging. So be yourself, enjoy it, and make loads of money if you can.
Fantastic advice. I think that authenticity point is really key. You know, it builds trust. And so if you're pretending to be someone else, then how can they really trust you? And I think it's really important for the listeners to hear that, because they might be thinking that there's like a cookie cutter image of an ideal lawyer that they need to mold themselves into. But actually, that's not the right way to approach it, and it's not true. And I think it's great that social media has been so good at allowing a lot of different people with different voices and different backgrounds to showcase their experiences and careers on social media, so that you can see it isn't just one type of person that becomes a lawyer, it's so many. So everyone has their own place, and your clients will resonate with you. You know, the clients that you'll be able to work effectively with are the ones that are going to like you and want to be.
And you'll surprise yourself sometimes in what clients, and you're dead right. I think the law is actually very democratic now. When I look at, you know, lawyers around me, you know, maybe 25 years ago, it would be a lot of white men. It's more women than men now coming through, which I think is good. I mean, my team, for instance, we've got 12 people in the team, and there are only four guys. So, you know, the law has changed. It's way more democratic, and you are able to be yourself. And I think, you know, looking at this as a business owner and a lawyer, I really don't care about your gender or your ethnicity. What I care about is, are you any good? You know, can I trust you? And what are the prospects? You know, are you a potential future leader? That's what's important to most lawyers, because ultimately, you know, we're just business people. We're not crusaders. We're looking to perpetuate our businesses. We're looking to make money. We're looking to do it in a civilized way with nice people. And that's one of the things that I can say, you know, with some degree of confidence, that to go into work every day and to be surrounded by bright, engaging, and often very funny people is a great privilege. And that's what we have created. You know, in the law profession is really good. Although I've come across some inauthentic people, and also some people I've really wanted to smash their heads in sometimes, it's very rare. It actually, most people are really decent and good to deal with, and it's a very civilized way of earning a living. So that's what we have created, you know, because actually no one cares anymore. You know, it's not, and it doesn't matter who your clients are. So I remember the first time I got a very big client from the Middle East, and I made some assumptions that they'd be, a very powerful person. I made some assumptions that he would not enjoy the fact that his lawyer was gay. So I decided, against my better judgment, not to mention it, even though I'm very out to everyone else. And then after about a year, I just thought, oh, sod this. I'm just going to tell him, because if he doesn't like it, who cares? And I might lose him as a client. And it just shows you don't judge people, because he said, well, I don't care. I've got gay friends. It's like, oh, so what was I worrying about? You know, it goes back to my authenticity point. I was expecting this very powerful businessman from Saudi. She's not known for its gay rights, let's face it, to be homophobic. And actually, he was bigger than that, because he didn't care. What he wanted was a really smart lawyer who's going to be on his side. And the fact that I was honest with him actually made him a more loyal client, because I could have easily just said nothing. So again, it's the authenticity point. And you summed it up beautifully. If you try and be someone else, people will spot it and they can't trust you. And the main thing that we've got in this profession is that we must be trusted 100%. You know, they tell us their deepest, darkest secrets. They tell you all about their wealth and where it comes from. They tell you things they wouldn't tell their own spouses. We have to be trusted with that information, and we have to be trusted to act in their best interests every single time and never in our self-interest. And as soon as we lose sight of that, we lose our bearings, we lose our purpose, and we won't become successful lawyers. And that authenticity is really part of that message. Be yourself. Stand up for your clients. Never do the wrong thing. I always follow my gut. If something feels wrong, I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to walk away from it.
Wonderful. Very thought-provoking. Thank you so much, James, for coming on the show. And just before we let you go, where can listeners follow you?
So obviously you can follow me on LinkedIn, James Quarmby. Quarmby is spelled Quarmby. So I'm easy to find on there. Additionally, I do a occasional podcast called Capital Talk, which follows on from my I have a digital newsletter called Capital Letters. And so you can find Capital Talk on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the rest of it. And it's me chatting with people about stuff relating to tax, the economy, and the law. And my latest one was with Lord Richard Harrington on the election, the one we're going to have, how that might affect tax policy and what Labour might do were they to become the government. So that's how you can find me.
Lovely. Okay, well, I will leave a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes of the podcast, so listeners can go over and follow you easily. Yeah, thank you again, James, for coming on the show. It's been great to have you on. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
To hear more of the Student Lawyers podcast, hit the subscribe button and leave us a star rating and review. If you would like to join the Student Lawyer as a writer, please email hello@thestudentlawyer.com.